and I can tell myself that, but I find myself, you know, reacting entirely. I mean, maybe that's learning how to reconcile the two is the whole point, but I still find myself far too attached to, you know, certain experiences and far too avoidant of others. So, but I don't know how you...
That's because you have read it in the book, but not experienced it. That's the whole point of meditation, is to cultivate wisdom through experience. If you read in the book that everything is impermanent, it's not going to do much.
Well, and even in retrospection, I can look back, you know, a couple months ago and think, wow, if I just kind of not been so attached, but it's, yeah, I don't know. I can't seem to then translate that to how I act in the present moment.
So. Well, at least you're aware of what is happening.
Okay, is that a
just
start?
It's just a matter of practice now. Just a matter of practice.
But it's possible, though.
So I find that sometimes judgment and observation can be a thought, can be a judgment, or it can be an observation. And an observation isn't bad, but a judgment perhaps is. And trying to separate the two is the goal.
And it's the experience that facilitates that.
Yeah.
Because there's no judgment anymore, because it's actually happening, right? If I touch the fire and feel the heat and say fire is hot, it's not a judgment. It's an experience. It's discernment, wisdom, understanding. And our aim is to cultivate the wisdom of impermanence through experiential understanding. Then there is no judgment, right?
It just makes me happy to listen to you say that. I just feel good when I hear that. I don't know exactly why. It's just it just resonates deeply with me. So I feel very, very nice, very good about it.
And then, once we are established in the wisdom of impermanence, then there are meditations where you start cultivating the wisdom of impersonality.
The wisdom of impersonality?
Impersonality.
Define that.
That means it's that sense of non-attachment, meaning when you experience pain, you can actually look at pain as pain, not my pain. You can look at all emotions, anger for example, anger as anger, not my anger. It's almost like taking a step back and being able to look at something that is happening at such a subtle level without identifying with it. So it creates that space between what is happening in the mind, because you are not identifying with it. You are not taking it personally. It becomes impersonal. And that space provides you reaction time, you know, that stepping back, being able to look at something as it is, pain as pain, anger as anger, hatred as hatred, greed as greed, not my greed, not my hatred. So in other words, impersonality, meaning that degree of awareness where you look at everything as a phenomenon, an impersonal phenomenon that arises based on conditions, ceases based on conditions. doesn't mean you don't exist. It simply means you exist without being attached to something. So it's not a question of whether you exist or not. It's a question of how you exist.
So when is attachment good?
Inherently, attachment is unwholesome. It generally leads to suffering.
Really?
Same is with detachment. Detachment is also unwholesome. What we cultivate is non-attachment. It's very difficult to intellectually understand that.
Well, I'm thinking of an athlete, and if an athlete has a goal, he's attached to that.
Okay.
And he strives to meet that goal. And a lot of athletes become that goal. And I'm sure a lot of them are heartbroken if they don't make the Olympics or whatever, but to some extent I would think that attachment allows us to be better.
So there is one athlete who has the attachment. Let's say there's another athlete who doesn't. So the athlete who has attachment, when he or she wins the medal, he will become overexcited, over-celebrating, getting carried away. Or if he or she does not win the medal, he is going to suffer.
Sure.
Right. Now there's another athlete who doesn't have a goal but has a purpose to give his best, to pursue excellence, without being attached to the end result. I'm simply going to do my best, be the best. I'm not attached to what happens at the end.
Well, I can see that. In one case, the person is attached to the outcome. In another case, the person is attached to the process.
It's the words fall short, but what the second person is doing is non-attachment. That's why I said detachment is as bad as attachment. Now, in non-attachment, the athlete is focused on the process. He is focused on the cause-effect relations, meaning what causes what. If I do this, this will happen. If I do that, that will happen.
He's evaluating himself.
Right. He's more focused on the phenomenon, the process of attaining, not achieving.
The experience.
Right.
The experience of it.
Right. He's focusing on the phenomenon, the process, and not on as if he is doing it. You see, you can have an intention, you can have an inclination, you can have a wholesome desire. But there is no need to be attached to it, meaning as if I am doing it. We can do something without having a sense of being a doer. That is non-attachment. So athlete is simply going by cause-effect relations, simply functioning, participating in that cause-effect relations, not as a doer.
That's tough. I just had a thought of a surgeon. If you were being operated on by a guy, do you want to be operated on the guy who's attached to a good outcome, or someone who's detached from a good outcome? I'm not sure.
Both are unwholesome. Well, let's go back to the athlete, for example. You must have heard the word zone, being in the zone. In fact, majority of the athletes who attain the highest level of excellence, they say that when they were in that moment, they lost their sense of self. Not just the athletes, the dancers, the musicians. A dancer feels that he or she is actually not dancing. The dancing is happening. They literally lose their identity. And that's where the excellence arises.
I can certainly see that.
That is non-attachment. Because until there is I, there is always that separation from the phenomenon. Whether it is dancing or running or swimming or playing an instrument.
So it's to what extent the ego is involved that would make, like in the surgeon case, you can have a surgeon who understands the value of doing their job well, and the surgeon who understands the value of doing a job well, but because it serves their ego, and so one would be, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. A surgeon is better equipped to perform surgery on somebody else's daughter versus his own daughter.
Because he's non-attached.
He's non-attached. His mind is relaxed. There's no tension there. And so it is with everything. And I think you said it rightly. Psychologically speaking, to the extent ego is involved, to that extent there is tension. There is, the whole aim is to how we can allow the flow, how we can let things just happen and simply participate in the flow.
So in the moment of performing surgery or your task as an athlete, there really isn't the debate of attachment or non-attachment. That's on a very surface level. So in the moment of the task, it's not really there. It's more just things are happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. I'm not doing the surgery. The surgery is being done. This is not some philosophical view. We can experience that. Even in the act of mowing the lawn, I'm mowing the lawn, versus let the lawn be mowed, taking the actor out of the action.
But being aware.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Being in the moment.
Mm-hmm. It begins with that. Again, it's not about... So when you remove the actor, the action doesn't become inaction. So on one hand you have action, on other hand you have inaction, and then there is a third category, non-action.
It's funny because I'm writing this paper now, and one of these big rules is don't use passive sentences because you need to have the subject acting upon the verb, which is so completely opposite of what we're talking about. So it's because so you can't say, the building was built. You have to say who built the building. Mm-hmm. So it's all about the subject and the person responsible for that action. Whereas, ideally that shouldn't really.
Yeah, linguistically we have to use,
color.
Well, we could say it passive, but I think there's like a cultural emphasis on...
Right, the doer.
The doer,
yes.
So we just switch all senses to passive.
But the problem is it's not passive either, you see? It's neither active nor passive. You see, that's the thing. Okay. It's like I said, it's neither action nor inaction. it's non-action. So you can call it so active, passive versus what would you call it? It's transcendental, basically. It's a transcendental state of abiding.
Well, in some languages are arranged so that the verb is the central, like we arrange everything around the subject. Another, I think there are like, do they do it all around the verb? So would that kind of fall under the transcendence?
Yes. I don't know. There some languages like that?
I know a lot of West African languages do.
Oh, really?
I don't know about, I was wondering about Asia, because this philosophy is more, I mean, sprung out of Asia, but I don't know beyond that.
It's a good point. I think, but the whole thing about impersonality or non-self or non-action, non-attachment is we cannot actively pursue it. It's not something you try to achieve, you know. If you do that, there is misery. It's like trying to reach the horizon. You'll never reach there, right? That's why that impermanence, that cultivation of the wisdom of impermanence comes handy. The more we establish ourselves in impermanence, the more we abide in that, automatically what arises out of that is impersonality. So in fact, impersonality, egolessness is an epiphenomenon. It's something arises out of something else. It's not something you can directly pursue.
Well, then, sorry, I'm sure this is common knowledge. But so, sitting here trying to meditate, I know in my own head I'm clearly not really meditating because I'm falling asleep, but alternating between falling asleep and thinking about dinner. So it's... how do I find that then without striving? Because do you just wait and all of a sudden you're meditating? Or is that meditating, being all over the place like that?
Yeah. Basically, when you realize that the mind is wandering, that realization is meditation. The aim is not to have aversion to wandering. Gently bring your attention back to the breath. It's going to wander again. The problem is not wandering. The problem is having aversion to wandering. How you feel about it. Because aversion, you're going to wander more. It's like reacting to reaction. That's right.
I was going to say, so what noticed that enabled you to then recall it? The dozing in and out, the thinking about that lunch or dinner or whatever. There's something very subtly that noticed that. That's why you reported on it. So it's that very subtlety that's already in a meditative state. That's
so it's simply awareness.
Mm-hmm. Ultimately, awareness and understanding. Mind wanders. In fact, the beauty of awareness and understanding is the moment you realize that the mind is wandering, in that moment itself, you will come back to your breath. You see?
Well, then with practice, does something shift with practice, or do you not really even worry or think about anything shifting? I mean, do you start to wander less, or?
Automatically. You don't strive to not wander.
It just happens.
It's called effortless effort.
Okay.
Yeah? Just be. The mind is wandering. That's all. Just notice it. Don't try not to wander. Then it's going to wander more. Just awareness. There is this wandering. And the miracle happens. It's just the nature works mysterious ways. Why is it that in the moment of awareness everything is taken care of.
Like my knee, whenever I meditate, my knee starts throbbing. And so now I just go to that sensation and breathe into it and let it be. I don't fight it. And then all of a sudden I'm surprised because it's gone.
Yes. The only one element you would add is with the understanding of impermanence.
Mm-hmm.
It makes everything easy.
It does.
It's not like with the thought, okay, there is this pain, I am not going to fight it. That is not enough.
No, it's not.
I'm not going to fight it because I know that it is impermanent in nature. That mm-hmm. is the key.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Because then wisdom is involved.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Understanding is involved. What is the most powerful thing in the world? It's wisdom.
I thought it was love.
Silly you.
That's what I tell my Marine son. So he won't get so brainwashed.
It's very interesting that you mention it because there are meditation practices, and if you want a shortcut to wisdom, love it is.